Welcome back to Hoops HD, everybody. It is Monday, March 25th. That means it's time for our Sweet 16 version of the Hoops HD Report. I'm your host, Chad Sherwood. We've got Joby Fortson and John Titel to my sides, David Griggs below me, John Sleeker to one side, and Rocco Miller from Bracketeer.org. Coming to us from his private jet plane, I believe. flying around the country, but going to all the games, I believe. I think I saw him at three or four different regional sites this week on TV. But we've got a lot to get to, and exciting, and what ended up being a somewhat chalky at the end of the day, first couple of rounds of the NCAA tournament. We're going to kind of go through everything here, but maybe we should start with the screen share, Griggs, unless you got something else to throw out there.
Let's get the CBI screen share up. We've got a lot. It wasn't entirely chalky. Chicago State had a nice win. A couple good games in that. Evansville advancing as a lower seed.
I'll throw the CBI bracket up at the end of the show if anyone wants to see it. But this is the Final Four bracket. I'm going to zoom in a lot here. We're going to go region by region, and we will because it's zoomed in that way. We'll start in the East region here, where our Sweet 16 teams are obviously UConn, San Diego State, Illinois, and Iowa State. Let's start at that very top bracket there that UConn came out of. And Titel, let me start out with you here. UConn looked absolutely dominant, I thought, in both their games. I mean, this team is cruising so far.
They are, and now we get the rematch of the 2023 title game. The irony being the Aztecs' leading scorer that night now plays in a different region for Arizona, and actually Keyshawn Johnson. We got two of the top 10 defenses in the nation, so it should be quite a battle. UConn fans only a 90-minute drive to Boston. San Diego State fans literally have to fly across the country, so there should be a lot of Huskies in the stands. UConn, very balanced offense. Aztecs have Jaden Ledee scoring 22 a game and nobody else in double figures. So if you want to look at the key matchup, I think it's 7'2" Donovan Clingan. If he can hold Ledee to just 10 to 15 points, I think this could be a blowout.
Yeah, I thought you could give me how many minutes it takes San Diego State fans to drive to Boston, like 9,000.
I can't count that high.
That's quite a trip.
To get there, UConn with the win over Northwestern, San Diego State over the surprising Yale team Rocco, I think we saw, actually, maybe other than three out of the four teams in this region actually won their conference tournaments, we saw with Auburn and with many others, winning the conference tournament can be a bit of a death sentence for the NCAA tournament again this year.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was interesting. Auburn was actually my pick to win it all, so I'm glad I wasn't on the show last week to embarrass myself. Because that dream ended thanks to the team on my head right now, which is Yale, who also represented the team that was our last hope for any kind of non-power Sweet 16 story. So it was a interesting part of the bracket, but obviously a matchup that Yale was able to exploit. Really surprised that Auburn couldn't distance themselves in that game. And I don't know how much it mattered. I think UAB, they also won a tough conference tournament. They played very well in the American Conference tournament, gave San Diego State a great battle. But, you know, obviously they fell short as well as a conference tournament champ.
Yeah, and kind of the bottom half of the bracket here, Joby, we saw Duquesne pull one of the most surprising upsets. There's a conference tournament champ that actually did something in the tournament before they lost to Illinois. But how about the Illini?
It may have been just too early in the day for BYU. Yeah, you know, it's one of the earlier games. And I was surprised by that because I didn't think Duquesne, because combined with BYU really is a five seed here. You know, that's what people forget when they just look, because they were forced down due to bracketing rules. I thought BYU would roll them, but Duquesne hung in there. BYU was cold as ice. I mean, you know, yeah, you know, they couldn't hit the broadside of a barn. It was just an off night for BYU, but give Duquesne credit. They got themselves a win that they'll remember a long time. The next game didn't go quite as well, running up against the Illini. But you know what? This team will be remembered in Duquesne, you know, in Duquesne lore, I'm sure, a decade from now.
Well, you know, since 1977, they've been in the tournament, so you got to remember this, because most people that are living in Duquesne fans don't even remember that 77 team. Yeah.
And that was their first NCAA tournament win since 1969.
I at least could say I was alive in 77, although I definitely was not paying attention to college basketball then. But Salika, Washington State got the win over Drake, which kind of surprised us before falling to Iowa State. And what was Kyle Smith's last two games there at Wazoo?
Yeah, I feel like we were delaying the inevitable right here. Now he gets to look forward to cross-country trips in the ACC next season. And I think
Stanford job, by the way, for those who don't know. Yes.
Yeah.
And I should also add, that was not the only coaching change involved in the East region, because we'll also touch on this later. Dusty May left FAU and is going to be the head coach at Michigan. But anyhow, getting back to these games at the bottom, Iowa State did not have the same listless performance they had in the tournament last year and came out firing against both South Dakota State and Washington State. Now, they did get a bit of a test later on against the Jackrabbits, but they were eventually able to pull away.
Yeah, and Griggs, this sets up a really interesting Illinois-Iowa State game. Two teams that I think it's the only game in the Sweet 16 between two teams that won their conference tournament, if I'm correct.
I never really assessed that, but I think that you may be correct. Whether they won their conference tournament or not, they both sort of steamrolled their way through this. Neither one of them really had to sweat that much. Illinois trailed for part of their first round game, but at no point did it feel like they weren't going to win it. I'm actually going to go with Illinois here. As good as Iowa State's been playing, I think that part of it was you looked at the Big 12 tournament and then you looked at the location out in Omaha. I mean, it was basically a virtual home game as far as the atmosphere. I don't know how many will get out to Boston. But, this is one of the more compelling Sweet 16 games.
I think it is. And maybe what I want to do is run through each of you here real quickly. Give me a pick of who is going to win this region. We could do this in each of the four regions here. Well, Griggs, we were just talking. What do you think? Do you think the winner of this game, or do you think UConn is
UConn? I don't even think they struggle against San Diego State. I think Illinois or Iowa State, whoever ends up winning it, might be able to stay with them for a while. But I almost think UConn walks into the Final Four.
I kind of agree with you, Rocco. Do you agree with him also at this point?
I'm curious because Illinois is extremely athletic. Iowa State's playing at a very high level, and they have a nice front line. So I think Illinois-Iowa State shapes up to be an excellent, excellent matchup. I really don't have a strong lean either way on who wins it, but I do think the winner will challenge UConn. Just the way those two teams are playing right now is a very high level of college basketball. So, I wouldn't want to discount the Aztecs. They were unbelievable yesterday. But we've seen this matchup already, and the teams haven't changed all that much. In fact, San Diego State, you could argue, without Mensa, are even more at a disadvantage because he was their big stopper last year to keep UConn from really, putting the game away when San Diego State rallied late to cut it to six. Although most of the game was not very pretty, that gave San Diego State a little bit of life. They don't even have that level of defense this year. So it's hard to pick for the Aztecs at all here.
Yeah, I agree with you. Joby.
UConn's certainly the pick here. I will say in one component, though, UConn has changed a bit. They just are still awesome.
Yeah.
Their starting lineup has had a whole – there's no Sanogo. But they've got great players. But the key for me is the fact that Illinois and Iowa State, we mentioned this when we hit Auburn. Both of them won their conference tournament, especially Illinois winning on Sunday against a tough Wisconsin team, and they survived the Sweet 16. Does this allow them to re-energize after what's been kind of a tough few weeks, just on number of games? Who knows? They're both talented enough to definitely challenge UConn, but if you don't pick UConn, you're going against the odds right here.
Yeah. Ty, tell you, you think UConn wins this region as well now?
Yes, but speaking of, don't discount teams, Iowa State, as we all recall, they just played one of the best teams in the nation, Houston, a week ago and beat them by 28 points in the conference tourney title game. So if there's anybody who can beat up on one of the big boys, it is your Iowa State Cyclone.
All right. Slicka, did I ask you?
You have not.
Okay,
I
real
would
quick.
also say you. I would also say UConn ends up winning the thing. My guess is they'll probably go through Illinois, and I'll be getting multiple texts saying, "Why the hell is Terrence Shannon Jr. even playing in this region?"
Stalik, let me stick with you as we moved out of the West region here, which I don't know how much you want to do on Wagner's big win over Howard, but North Carolina took care of Wagner, and then and Michigan State really had no trouble with Mississippi State, but also could not hold off Carolina either.
Well, it looked like for the first 10 or so minutes, Michigan State actually got out to a double-digit lead against Carolina, and that whittled away in a heartbeat as the Tar Heels got, I believe it was a 17-nothing run to take the lead late in the first half, and they were able to take control in the second half with another run against the Spartans.
Yeah, and we've got North Carolina Vance and Joby. I know you've got some Alabama ties, so I got to go for you on this. 109-96 over Charleston,
Oh,
and
what
one
they
of
do?
many games that went over 100 points, amazingly, so far this tournament. And then the Grand Canyon game, which was one of the most chaotic games I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, let's talk about the Grand Canyon. The woman sounded like she was in giving birth on television.
Alabama proved who they are a lot, which is I'm still not in love with their defense. That they can, when you're giving up 100, but score 109, that shows how good it is. Oates has really got this flow working. Sears runs the point beautifully. Alabama has the capability to challenge Carolina here, but they're going to have to play some defense to be able to do it. But Alabama has the potential to go all the way. But I mean, at some point, the shots won't hit, like they did in a little bit at the tail end of the Grand Canyon game. But you're going to be facing from here on out, North Carolina and Arizona, UConn, someone's going to, who is as talented, if not more talented, will be able to take advantage of that, I fear, for the Tide.
Right.
I do
Go
have
ahead.
to like Grand Canyon, sort of a team that we has a history with Hoops HD, a former team of the people when they were a transitional team, a remarkable fan base. I really think they showed out, and maybe people that weren't as familiar with them kind of got a sense of that through.
Only school where they kept switching to their viewing party. I think of all the teams out in the tournament, they kept switching to the Lopes viewing party back in Phoenix.
Yeah, and it was in the arena, and I don't know if it was sold out or not, but it appeared to be, and they certainly sold their ticket allotment and more. I mean, it was really energetic on the floor. We had watched Grand Canyon play a lot this year, and I know Rocco did. I know Ty, or I know that we all did. Stalika, Chad. This is probably the most energy that I've ever seen. That was so poorly harnessed. They just didn't do anything, but it was like you just couldn't, you were just almost in awe of the effort, but it was so intense that they just couldn't really execute and get into a flow.
Every time they got the ball, they pushed up the court and turned it over and pushed it up the court and turned it over and pushed it up the court and then Alabama would turn it over back, and it was just ridiculous. But Rocco, Clemson, one of the surprising teams to be in the Sweet 16 after the way they bowed out of the ACC tournament early. And, being New Mexico is one thing, but the win against Baylor just shocked me. I don't know if you agree with that or not.
Yeah, I was a little surprised they won that game for sure. It's another one I picked wrong. I think I had Baylor coming out of this region last week. But it just goes to show you at the Power Six level, Clemson, they've had like three different seasons. They were incredible the first 2 months of the year. They hit a huge wall through different pockets, I guess, of ACC play. Of course, gave you that horrible taste in your mouth when they lost by 21 to Boston College in the ACC tournament in a game. We thought they probably needed to be a six seed or better. Committee gave them a little bit of a favor, giving them a six seed. And of course, with PJ Hall, Joe Girard, the way Chase Hunter played in the Baylor game, I thought that was one of the best games he played all year, scoring 20 and adding six assists. So I just, the other thing was PJ Hall fouled out with about 50 seconds to go on kind of an unfortunate play where he collided with a Baylor rebounder. And I thought, Baylor being down two, PJ Hall out of the game, they're going to probably get this to overtime and find a way to win. And Clemson still made all the key plays down the stretch to secure that victory and get to Los Angeles.
Yeah, they tried to blow it, Rocco. They did everything. It looked like they were going Clemsoning. To. Yeah. Remember, Baylor missed two crucial free throws under a minute. But Clemsoning almost came a verb again because they were up comfortably with like 2 minutes to go and did their best. that eight point margin is indicative of the game, but it is not indicative of the last 2 minutes.
Correct. Yeah, and I think Jacoby Walter missed those two free throws. He was an 80% free throw shooter throughout the year, goes 5 for 11 from the line. So a little bit of freshman jitters perhaps, but that was a nice break for the Tigers, no doubt.
Tytel, your Arizona Wildcats are in the Sweet 16 as well, and they were my pick to win this region, got by a Dayton team that got by Nevada before that.
Yeah, if you just look at the scores, 20-point win and 10-point win, you must think that, oh, this was an easy home cooking or a cakewalk. It was not. The Beach hung around for well over 20 minutes until we got on a huge run to put them away in the second half. And Dayton, we were up 17 after 17 minutes, and I was expecting another 20-point win. And then they decided to run a pick and roll because Umar Balo can't defend the pick and roll. And Deron Holmes scored all their points and brought them all the way back almost. And then they just kind of fell apart towards the end. Very happy we're in the Sweet 16. Very happy with a pair of double-digit wins. But a lot of weaknesses pointed out, and we need to clean up some things because Clemson is not a fluke. Clemson is for real.
Yeah, well, what do you think? Who do you think, Tytel, comes out of these four teams here? Did your Arizona Wildcats make the Sweet 16? Make the Final Four? Or?
So that will probably lead to us having the Caleb Love game, as he was the leading scorer for the Tar Heels. Ironically, last year when they lost the quadrupler to Alabama on Thanksgiving weekend of 2022. So I can't wait for that game, although it's going to be less exciting than last year. Clemson is eighth in the nation in free throw percentage. So I would hate to get into a close game down the stretch and have them win it at the free throw line. But if we're making our threes, which we should, then I like our chances. And then if it's Arizona, Carolina, maybe Caleb Love goes off for 40 points. Maybe he tries to play too hard and goes off for 2 points. I think he will be the X factor in that game because it's after him.
All right. Sleeka, you have a pick up for this bracket?
Well, I think before I move on to that, I do want to mention at least one of the first round games where Dayton actually came back from 17 down to beat Nevada. I think that would just further validate what Joby have been talking about in regards to the Mountain West this year, in addition to New Mexico just getting pounded in round one against Clemson. But if we're talking about this bracket right here, I would probably – my initial pick was that Arizona was going to win the bracket, although I had Carolina not even making it to the round of 16. So who knows? However, I do think the Wildcats end up beating Carolina for what should be their first Final Four trip in, what, 23, 22 years?
I got Zona over Bama.
23, okay.
Rocco, who do you have winning this?
I'm a little torn here because I see a lot of different scenarios. I'm trying to see, Clemson and Arizona are going to play the really early game Thursday, 4 p.m. local time. And I don't think that's great for the Wildcats. They would have probably liked to pregame a little longer, get in there later at night. I was actually at the 2013 game when Arizona lost on a buzzer beater to LaQuinton Ross in Ohio State in that same exact 4 p.m. game in Los Angeles, same exact building. So it's just giving me weird vibes of that game. Otherwise, the formula to beating Arizona is slowing them down, getting them out of transition, keeping them off the offensive glass. Not sure Clemson's that team. And then the Carolina, Alabama, I just think in Arizona, those three, they all want to play their style. They're all good enough to do it. They're not going to adjust for their opponent. And I guess I got to stick with Carolina because they're probably the best of the three, but I really think it's up for grabs. Arizona will, of course, have the huge advantage of playing in the West, but I think at a certain point that will wear off.
All right. And Joby, real quick, you're picking this region.
Yeah, Carolina is looking good, and the key, it's what I hinted at. Of those three that Rocco mentioned, Carolina's got the best defense going on right now, and that's a deciding factor for me, though I'll defer just – I'll mirror what Rocco said, all three – I think Clemson's the one, not like the other, and all three could potentially go.
Griggs, let's go jump over to, if I could get the screen to slide over here a bit. I'm going to slide it over to the Midwest region. There it is.
Yeah. Well, there it is, right there.
With Purdue over Grambling and then over Utah State. Against, take care of a Utah State team that decided that the way they wanted to play was to try to shoot over Zach Edey every play and then foul him every time he had the ball. And they have no players left. And it was a 106-67 win.
Which is kind of disappointing for Utah State, especially after we learned, if you've been following Twitter and the press conferences, that Zach Edey's only good because he's not good, he's just tall. if you haven't seen Matt Painter's response to that, go find it. It is awesome. But
Rocco, I know Utah State's coach is on the way to Washington. I don't think it was a very good game plan. I hope he does better at your school.
Well, you know, it's funny about the Purdue game was I got a text about 10 minutes after it started, probably the second commercial timeout. And after two TV timeouts, it was an even game. I think Utah State might have even been up by one. And it's almost like the team got the text at the same time I did because they fell apart from that point forward. It was never competitive the rest of the 32 minutes. So, yeah, that thing leaked out pretty early. In fact, the contract, I think, was signed a week ago, and they were waiting to get knocked out. Yeah, it was a weird deal. It's a weird time right now with all the coaching changes in the middle of the games.
I'd like to thank you for joining Creighton on being on my death list for going 0-2 against the Mountain West this week.
Right. Perhaps a final thought discussion. But, yeah, that is a really good point, Rocco. Now, I don't know how much of a difference it made, but Utah State was completely overwhelmed. It ended up looking like a bye game. And, lots of nail biters in the Midwest region, at least in the top half of the bracket.
And TCU is a former Mountain West member, so Joby can count that loss against the Mountain West.
Joby, Gonzaga is going to be their next opponent. Gonzaga, no problem with McNeese, as I think I'm the only person in the world that thought that McNeese was not going to win in the tournament, which I've called for the last 2 weeks, but everyone else had them. But maybe we got to talk for a minute here about the Kansas-Samford game and the fact that we review everything in the world except the most important plays of games because we can't review a clear block foul call.
Rocco, I know you were hot about this too. Go ahead.
The fact of the matter is, well, I think if the feet are inside the arc, or inside the arc and around the basket, that I think that's a reviewable component. But the fact of the matter is, we already probably have too many reviews. Oh, God, help us if we get.
Now, wait a second.
It's like the pass interference. It's like the pass interference thing between the Rams and the Saints. I don't want that reviewed.
The NBA have a system to actually review this? It's a coach through a coach's challenge.
I'd be fine with a coach's challenge on almost all of this. Yes. Yeah, as opposed to staring at the screens for so long. But yeah, Samford did what. Like, I mean, I'll be honest. I had Samford, not McNeese, in the Sweet 16. So, I got burned as much as anybody else because, with all of the issues, McKellar, et cetera, with Kansas, I thought they were vulnerable, and they were. And Samford probably should have won the game. But I don't know if I'm quite there with the uproar. Everybody and their dog was rooting for Samford. I want to look long-term on this. I get very nervous when we get too willy-nilly with replay because then we get officials staring at monitors, trying to determine whether there's 10.2 or 10.3 on the clock. I mean, you got to be, I just hold the brakes a little bit here.
Okay. But Gonzaga is now in the Sweet 16, and somebody picked Gonzaga in their Final Four. That's all I got to say over here. Nobody else thought they were going to pass the first round, and they did take care of Kansas. The Kansas, I think, showed the not having McCullough in that game. But Stalika, Creighton is in the Sweet 16 also, following a double overtime win against an Oregon team that they finally just completely wore down.
Well, if you looked at regulation in the first overtime, neither team had a lead bigger than 6 points, and I think it was Creighton that had a shot to what is it, win the game in overtime, ended up coming a little bit short, and they end up scoring, I believe, the first 15 points of double overtime before Oregon finally got a bucket in garbage time. But as it is, the Blue Jays survive, and they'll be moving on to face Tennessee.
Yeah, Rocco, correct me if I'm wrong. I think there were only two players that scored the entire like last 10, last 15 minutes plus the overtimes for Oregon.
Was it Dante and Shelstad?
Yeah,
Dante and
and
Cousinard.
Cousinard. Yeah,
Cousinard.
every
Yeah,
si every
Shelstad
single
fell
part.
down.
It
He fell down.
became a two player game for Oregon. It became 2-on-5, and they just
I
both
know.
wore down by the second overtime there, unfortunately.
Second overtime was totally over pretty quick. But Oregon missed they missed free throws in the end of regulation that would have won it. And so they had that game right, making the Dana Altman Bowl. First time they had ever he had ever faced Creighton since leaving forever ago. So yeah, pretty fascinating game.
Yeah, and Tytel, for Joby's sake, we won't discuss the lone ACC team that lost the NCAA tournament because it was in a play-in game that didn't even count. Tennessee is now, took care of St. Peter's easily and got by Texas in a pretty good game.
Yeah, so we are allowed to give the ACC credit, Chad, as everybody else has not lost besides
Yes.
our beloved Hoos. Yes, we had the Dana Altman game. Now we have the Rick Barnes game. It was a tight one, but the Vols pulled it out. I think that Tennessee, I don't know which Tennessee shows up. Dalton Knecht. It seems like one game he's 4 of 8 from threes against St. Peter's. The next game he's 1 of 8 from three against Texas. If he shows up and is making threes to lead their offense with their great defense, they can hang with anybody. But it's which one shows up?
I'm going to take the screen share down here for a second. I'm going to put up a different screen just for a second here as we talk about where we are going now in the Midwest region. Hopefully I got the right button here. This here on the screen, if you see it now, was the Maui Invitational bracket from this year, where Purdue began with a win over Gonzaga, followed by a win over Tennessee, followed by a win over Marquette, right there. Guess who Purdue's next three games are set up to be, starting with Gonzaga. We could have the Maui Invitational round two coming up here. If it plays out that way, Marquette would have to get past Houston, obviously, the region we haven't discussed yet. But Greg, so let me start with you. Who is going to win this as I get back on the screen here? Who is going to win this Midwest region?
Well, I right now I kind of like my Creighton was my original pick to get to the Final Four, and I think when they play up to their ceiling, they can play really well. But based on just how dominant Purdue has been, I think Purdue knocks out Creighton in the Elite Eight.
I can't go against the pick I made, but Gonzaga is my Final Four team, although Purdue has looked so good. So I'll go with the Zags over Tennessee. Tytel, where are you going?
I think we can all agree Purdue is the best team, but is there a bigger coaching discrepancy in terms of success in March than we got Matt Painter, 17 wins in 16 appearances against Mark Few, 43 wins in 24 appearances? Matt Painter cannot outcoach Mark Few, but we saw what Edie did in Maui, 25 points, 14 boards, 3 blocks in a 10-point win. He's a big reason they won the game. He will be a big reason they beat Gonzaga again, and then I know Tennessee's got a great offense, defense. I know Creighton's got a great offense. If they combine forces, they can beat Purdue. But I think Purdue is for real. They're less than 300 miles from Detroit. We should see a lot of black and gold in the stands.
Joby.
Yeah, boiler up. You might remember I picked Purdue to win the whole thing because of my favorite statistic. Every team that has lost to a 16 seed has gone
That's
on to
not
win the
doing
national
much.
title the next year. Purdue is on course to do that.
Rocco.
Yeah, I think that first matchup with Gonzaga has been irking at them. I talked to some of their people who write for the team, and then also a couple coaches on the staff about it earlier this year. And they've been hoping to play them again. In a strange way, it's come together here. They had a 4-point lead in that game in Maui, or sorry, in Honolulu, and Purdue had a big run to start the half, and that was the difference in the game. And I know now they're really dialed in, Gonzaga. They have a lot more individual skill, both at the guard and wing positions. Of course, Edie's a huge key. Like with Gonzaga only using 7 guys, are they going to use up all their fouls too quickly? But I have a feeling Gonzaga's clicking at the right time, and they're going to get this done. And I also think Tennessee just goes through too many scoring droughts. Creighton got over the Sweet 16 hump last year. I think they can get back to the Elite Eight. And we're going to get a Ryan Nemhard bowl game in Gonzaga Creighton in the Elite Eight.
You going with the Zags then?
I will go with Gonzaga as much as it kind of pains me personally. but I really am impressed with just how high of a level Nolan Hickman, Ryan Nemhard, Anton Watson, and Graham Ike is starting to really get his touch and becoming a much better defender. And that's going to help them a lot trying to stop Edie, for example, and then potentially Kalkbrenner.
Sleeka, last but not least, who wins the Midwest?
Well, I mean, we've touched on the fact that Gonzaga probably has the most coaching experience right here, but my guess is Creighton and Purdue are going to end up facing in the Elite Eight. And I do think this is going to be the year that Craig McDermott finally does get a team to the Final Four. I know we talk about Zach Edey, but do not forget about Ryan Kalkbrenner, another guy that can block out down low and also hit the occasional three. Plus, Creighton was actually getting some decent contributions from their bench, which is not one of their strengths. You've been following the Big East this year. This team was probably a little bit well-rested after bowing out early in the Big East Conference Tournament, and I do think they probably have enough pieces that they can get by both Tennessee and Purdue.
All right, let's go to the last of the four regions to discuss here. It is the South region. Griggs, did we lose you?
No, I'm right here.
You're there.
Right
okay,
here.
You're there. Let me start with you up top there, where Houston took care of Longwood easily. A&M sent Nebraska home in the first round again, as they have gone home in the first round of every NCAA tournament they've ever participated in. Yeah. And then brilliant. What a game the last night between Houston and A&M. Man. And they almost come – basically the comeback that happened to force overtime.
Yeah, and then the play at the end of regulation that got it to overtime. Houston was on – I mean, not just on the ropes, like practically almost outside of them. All their best players, or a lot of their top players, fouled out. It looked like A&M had all the momentum, but I mean, just somehow they found a way to win, and they're still alive. Again, Duke not quite as much trouble with James Madison in that other game.
Well, this is my problem, Rocco. My problem with Houston is I don't believe they have the ability to win a close game. And I think they kind of showed that at the end there because they couldn't hold on in a close game and they let A&M tie it. And but for almost blowing them out in the overtime, they would have lost this game. I don't know that Houston can win a close game at the end. I don't believe in them there.
Well, I think maybe potentially better way to explain it would be how to close out games. Like, they're struggling closing out because Calvin Sampson said it in the post game interview yesterday about the game they had at Baylor where they were up big the whole time and then blew a huge lead late and ends up going to overtime, but then they bounced back and got it done in overtime. Yesterday was insane. You know, just the first team in the NCAA tournament since 87 UTEP team to have four guys foul out and still win. The game was called so in a way that helped A&M, you know, in the way that they were getting to the line more, they were getting the rebounds more, and that's like Houston style. So it was a crazy matchup because usually Houston doesn't face a team that can do what they do as well as A&M does. But they found a way, and that's why they, they have a winning formula. They have so many good players too. I mean, when they play Duke, it's going to be probably more pros on the court than non-pros. That's how talented that matchup's going to be.
Yeah, and Tytel, Duke looks so good taking care of a decent Vermont team. I know a lot of people thought James Madison would give them a game, and they didn't.
True, but again, like, they beat a 12 and a 13 seed, albeit both by double digits. But, like, I don't know that that makes me a believer. I understand that, like, Houston almost got Uncle Buzzed, so, like, they're vulnerable. But, man, if this game was in the state of North Carolina, I'd be all about Duke, but it's in the state of Texas, so I think I'm going to lean towards Houston once we get that far.
Duke beat James Madison so badly that Mark Byington basically went running to Nashville to take the Vandy job.
He did take the Vandy job.
If that game was in North Carolina, the crowd might be even more pro-Houston.
Unless it was being played in Cameron, I think. But Joby, I know you want to talk a little about this NC State. This
oh my is God.
Absolutely amazing. There was only one team in history, my understanding was, that won five games in 5 days to win a conference tournament. And it was a UConn Huskies team that went on to win it all. You know, what happens if they meet Purdue in the regional final with your theory?
Exactly. Double theory. I think the pack is going to run out of gas at some point because, oh my gosh, 7 games in 12 days. Think about that for a second. 7 games in 12 days. And, you know, it's not that they don't have a bench, but they predominantly go 7-8. You know, guys, it's not like they have these long, it's not Houston, which I think can go much deeper with their bench, you know, for instance, or Duke, et cetera. Yeah, I said at the beginning of, you know, last week, you know, when we were analyzing this game, is do you have someone who can handle Burns on the inside? Because he's a different force. Yeah, you know, you just can't. I mean, can you imagine if Zach Edey and Burns meet up? That would be insanity.
Joby, I was hoping for Burns and Lampkin, but we didn't quite get it. We almost got it.
Yeah, very true. Very true.
That would have been incredible.
But the thing about also is Burns, due to how the game went in overtime, he actually put in like 30 plus minutes, I think. I mean, yeah, which is kind of crazy, and was very effective at the end. And here's what made NC State's win, so special, because, they beat Oakland, you know, who had the great win over Kentucky. Let's just sit back and say, wow, give Oakland all the credit in the world. But Horn
and Calipari is no longer welcome in the state of Kentucky, which is a bit of a problem to the coach there. But go ahead, Joe, maybe to cut you off.
Yeah, Horn, who I think is NC State's actually most consistent outside threat, he got the first 5 points of the game and then didn't score till overtime. Yeah, you know, and so he went AWOL basically the rest of the game. And so for them to hang on, that showed some grit as well. And then they started off with just a tremendous butt-whooping of Texas Tech, to be honest, which that is actually the big shocker there. So how far can State go? I don't know how much further they can, but you got to give them credit. This is that 11 seed, like Oregon almost was as well, that, you know, can, you know, showed, hey, they're getting hot at the right time and they've come together as a team. And Kevin Keats is not on the hot seat, I would dare say.
Yeah. What a region this was. Like, and you kind of, I mean, let's not forget the storyline of Oakland, too. I know that you all mentioned that, but Greg Campy, been at Oakland 40 years, a great coach. I know a lot of Power Five coaches that have been successful have studied their defense and copied some of the tactics. I was so happy to see him get that win. Kentucky fans, they love basketball. And while they were disappointed, I think they were all very happy for Greg Campy, and they're all handling this in a very mature way in the state right now. But they almost did it. They almost beat NC State. I'm not that I was rooting against NC State, but oh my God, Oakland had a chance to win at the end of regulation and they almost went to the Sweet 16. How amazing would that have been?
Oh, what a NC State here.
State and Clemson showed they were in the same conference with the big leads given up right at the
end. NC State, our only double digit seed in the Sweet 16. One more bracket here, Stalika. First of all, if Nebraska fans feel bad about their, I think, 0-7 all-time in the NCAA tournament, they can just look at Boise State, who's 0-10, I believe, now in the NCAA tournament after their first loss to Colorado. But how about Colorado, who you know, then took care of Florida and gave Marquette a game?
Yeah, that basically Shaka Smart also basically had an anvil hanging over themselves, but they were able to get that out of the way after surviving against a Colorado team that was looking to get Tad Boyle to what would have been his first Sweet 16, I believe. And I can't remember the last time Colorado would have gotten that far, although I think they've done that before on at least one occasion. But Marquette is going to be playing like a team that's going to have a lot of pressure off their shoulders down in Dallas.
A lot of pressure, but you can't take this NC State team lightly now, obviously. Tytel, let me start with you. Who do you think comes out of this region into the Final Four?
Man, this is one of the tougher ones just because a lot of the other regions have teams like Purdue and UConn who look head and shoulders above the rest. Houston looked mortal against Uncle Buzz. I think I'm going Marquette only because the NC State train has to run out of gas at some time. And I think their 6 days off are going to actually be a bad thing just because when you're living in the moment, like Joby said, 7 games in 12 days, like you don't think about anything else. You wake up and you play. I don't think they're going to be able to hang with Shaka. Duke Houston, I think is a toss up, but I'm going Houston based on geography. But Tyler Kolek is amazing. Like he misses the last 6 games of the season. All he does, averaged 20 points and 11 assists a game in his first weekend in the tournament. 9 turnovers is a bit troublesome. I get that, but I think that point guards win games in March, and I believe in Marquette.
Okay, Stalika, who do you think?
It's going to be bit fascinating for Shaka Smart to return to Texas, not to Austin, mind you, but at least up to Dallas here, where I think Marquette and Duke actually end up making it to the Elite Eight, because I think the Blue Devils will probably exploit the Cougars and their occasional offensive lapses right here. Although I think Marquette probably has more depth than the Blue Devils, so I'm going to stick with my original pick from last week and say that Marquette ends up going to the Final Four.
All right, Rocco, Marquette, Houston, going somewhere else?
Yeah, I'm going to take Duke to win it because, I mean, the way that they're playing, I saw them in person at Florida State like a month and a half ago, and they looked exactly like that in the last few games. I know that they played a 12 and a 13, but they are just so loaded with the way McCain is shoots the ball when you leave him open. Roach, Proctor, and then you have Filipowski in the middle. Going up against Houston, where you have LJ Cryer, who's different this year than what they had on top of all the surplus of toughness last year. But the one game that shocked me last year was when Houston got ran due to facing an overwhelming amount of athletes from the Miami Hurricanes in the same round. I really kind of see this Houston Duke matchup maybe playing out the same way, where Duke's athletes are just a little bit more superior. Again, Duke's younger, but minus the Roach factor, but I just love the way they're executing. I'm not even a Duke guy at all. It's just watching it from a pure basketball standpoint, they are really humming. And I can't pick against that. And I think Marquette also, very skilled offense, deep team, much deeper than Duke. But I just think Duke's going to be a buzzsaw if they get to that game.
Joby.
Yeah, and Rocco mentioned McCain is very huge. He broke a record for most 3 pointers and a half by a freshman. The
Yeah,
guy
that's the game
is
I was at. Yeah.
just absolutely lights out. I think Houston is going to stumble somewhere in one of these next 2 games. I don't think Houston's going to do it. And I honestly think the depth that Rocco mentions with Marquette will come in handy. They'll get the win against NC State. We'll be able to wear the pack out. And then I think after either a bloodied up Duke team, because Houston will bloody
Possible.
you up, or it's time for Houston to have their dip offensively, their 5 minute break without scoring, which Marquette will not do. And I feel the Golden Eagles and Matt will be very happy come a week from now.
Houston was my pick to win the national championship. Therefore, I'm going to pull a David Griggs move and say, why not? Let's let NC State keep winning this thing. But Griggs, what do you think?
Well, you pulled my move before I could.
I know, I stole it from you.
Houston's been my pick. They were my pick to win the national championship, and I was more impressed with them than anybody else throughout the regular season. And I know that they sort of probably got bored with things and were looking ahead and didn't look that impressive against Iowa State. And that's why in this game I'm gonna go with Duke. And you ruined it. You ruined it, Brent.
Are you going to
Wasn't
NC
nearly
State?
as good, but you
I
ruined
really
it.
believe that this is just one of those crazy things that this could go what at least one more game, maybe two.
I'm not with
NC
NC
State
State over
did beat
Marquette.
Duke less than 2 weeks ago.
They
They did.
did.
Just pointing out the
Yeah.
matchup
But I
is
think
there.
Duke, gets by Houston and then gets by Marquette. And I just think Marquette's better than NC State, and for a lot of reasons that have already been mentioned. They've had a great run. I'm really surprised that they were able to win any NCAA tournament games, much less two of them. And I think Marquette's a little bit better than Oakland. I think they're better than Texas Tech. They had to sweat those out. I just think that it's going to be Duke and Marquette, and I don't want to do this because it's Duke, but I think Duke goes to the Final Four.
Yeah, I don't think that's a bad pick at all. But I think NC State gives Marquette a game. I don't think this is going to be any type of role by any means here. But on that note, that's through everything here. I want to quickly run through a couple other tournaments, first of all. Here's an updated NIT bracket down to the Final Four starting here Tuesday night with UNLV Seton Hall, Georgia, Ohio State, Cincinnati at Indiana State, VCU at Utah. These are eight coaches that cannot move on to another schools yet. Is that, am I correct?
notably Indiana State.
In the NIT, you can. And I've heard the same rumors about some of these coaches that everybody else has. But how exciting to get to go to Indianapolis.
How about an exciting tournament, Griggs? The CBI, actually, up until today, had some amazing games. I mean, not that many people care or anybody's really watching, but Fairfield, Seattle, and High Point, Arkansas State into the semifinals tomorrow night after Chicago State gets their first ever postseason victory in that first round over UC San Diego.
Yeah, and then nearly pulled off a second one. And I will say this, all kidding, this, you know, on Twitter, we have fun beating up this tournament. And, you know, there's 4 3-point lines on the floor. I will say this sincerely, and I mean it sincerely. It was refreshing to see a Chicago State team in this event that legit wanted to be there. Some of these teams, you know, that you feel like they're going through the motions, especially in some of the early games. That Chicago State was happy to be there. Maybe they didn't even deserve it, but they were there and they played they played great, I thought. I mean, they really, really wanted to be there and they played well.
Yep.
Wish Seattle could have brought that thing with them to this tournament right here.
CIT. Go ahead, Rocco.
I was just going to say, I think there's a common theme with the teams that are playing well. It's High Point, first-year head coach, Arkansas State, first-year head coach, Fairfield, basically first-year head coach with young situation, and Seattle, second-year head coach. They're all in the same mold. They want to build these programs. They want the extra games. They've got everybody motivated, less likely to lose kids in the portal, et cetera. So there is a theme here.
Yeah, Chris Gracie is now the head coach of Fairfield. He was made permanent head coach. The interim tag was pulled off him. CIT, real quick, there was a 16-team event that only had 9 teams in it, kind of AC8 style, honestly. But Fort Wayne, upset win at Tarleton tonight, so they're going to be playing Norfolk State Wednesday night. Site and time still to be announced, and Fort Wayne versus Norfolk State. How about Norfolk State going for the first ever postseason championship, I believe, other than
conference? I think that would be kind of cool, actually.
I think safe for Fort Wayne, honestly. On that note, though, let's go ahead and pull this down here. I want to run through each of you for any other final thoughts on anything that we saw, anything that's going on. And kind of let me throw mine out there first, though, this week, though. There is a lot of talk about the fact that the Big East is 3-0 has all three teams have not yet lost in the NCAA tournament, despite the fact that by seed, none of them were supposed to have lost. And that is therefore reason why St. John's, Seton Hall, Providence, Villanova should have been in this tournament. It is not. Just because Gonzaga still is alive does not mean Pacific belonged in this tournament. Did not even mean San Francisco, the third best team, belonged in this tournament. It has nothing to do with who's in your conference. That's to do with whether or not you belonged in. And three Big East had three great teams and a lot of bubble that couldn't make the cut. And I have no problem with the committee leaving those teams out. That's my little rant, but Joby, let me run to you.
Yeah, awesome logic. Well,
do you know what conference didn't deserve at larges? Oh, yeah. Yeah. that my favorite whipping boy. But in all fairness, you know, this, I think what we're going to see, you know, it was Clemson, Purnell was asked again about that when he was setting up, you know, for the weekend, the Big 12, you know, hey, you're playing a Big 12 team, you know, you kind of criticized it. All of this is what it's going to come out, I think, at the end of the day, given the Mountain West underseeded by experts, but then underperformed. The Big 12 having some slip-ups here and there among some of the teams that had bad out-of-conference schedules. I am very hopeful we will see a net rejigger a little bit. Just whether it's some form of cap on scoring margin and efficiency or something, because I do worry. It's my one whipping, component. I don't like bloated nets that mislead everything. And that's my hit against the Mountain West. But more importantly, on the court, I don't like what it's turning people into, which is, oop, can't put in the freshman, and get your team ready. We got to run up the score. And I am hoping that because coaches have gotten to the point of recognizing that ability, that we actually will see some change, at least in terms of the margin of victory or margin of possessions, as it were, so that we don't have this. And guess what? When that happens, you're probably not going to hear me complain about the Mountain West as much because it won't be a problem.
All right, Tytel.
Two quick notes. We've seen amazing buzzer beater and game winners in the past. Chris Jenkins to win the championship several years ago, Jalen Suggs to beat UCLA from midcourt. But watching KJ Simpson's shot bounce around the rim five times before falling in is just one of the most amazing shots I've ever seen. And it's going to be forgotten because Colorado is not advanced, but it was amazing. And back in January, I had a choice. Should I go to the Boston Regional because it's closer to DC, or the LA Regional because the Wildcats were doing good and they'd probably stay out west? And I'm fortunate to say I made the right choice. I fly out tomorrow, and if my good friend Mr. Miller takes off that ugly Yale hat, I'd be happy to greet him tomorrow and Wednesday and the rest of the week, because we are going to have a little Hoops HD meetup. It's crypto.com.
All right, Rocco, let me go to you.
Yeah, I'm going to leave the Yale hat at home because I've been dying to meet John for years. It's going to be a great time. I'll put it back on when I get home. Just kidding. That's going to be tremendous, and, not necessarily the four teams I was hoping to see, but it will get a lot of great basketball between those four teams. So can't complain. My overall observation is, going off of the most popular analytic tool, KenPom, of course, it tells you it's a great year for him. 13 of the top 14 teams are still alive, and the only three leftovers, one of them 17th, San Diego State, 23rd, Clemson, and of course, NC State, the surprise team in the 50s, but they're still a power conference school. Somebody earlier today posted the budgets of each of the 16 schools, and San Diego State, who's a basketball-focused school, at $7.8 million a year budget, is the lowest budget team to make it to this round. So for me, it's sort of concerning because we're also going through this expansion talk. We're going through realignment where, the two top conferences are starting to separate from the next pack of power conferences. That division is getting even bigger to the next set of conferences. And I don't know that this was the best year for all of this to happen. I would have loved to see a couple non-power teams break through. Again, I don't consider the Aztecs a non-power team at all. They're right at this level. So I have mixed feelings about it, but we are going to get a great Sweet 16 round and a great Elite Eight round, I believe, this weekend. We should have some classic games. I'm not sure which ones they're going to come from, but there's a lot of great talent out there.
Rocco, just so that you and Tytel can meet up, I am going to mail you my Princeton Tigers pin so he can see that on your shirt if you're not going to wear the yellow hat. Is that okay?
No. Yeah, just send it to the hotel. We'll pick it up on our way in.
Salika, you're up.
Well, there were a couple more coaching changes I wanted to get to that I did not cover earlier. One was Darren DeVries, who's going to be leaving Drake and is going to be headed towards West Virginia along with his son in the transfer portal. But if you notice my wardrobe change, I also have to salute Marshall coach Dan D'Antoni, who is going to be completing a 10-year career at Marshall, including one NCAA tournament appearance along with the win against Wichita State, which was their first tournament appearance going back to 1987. But I also want to share a little bit of a D'Antoni story that I'm sure Chad and Griggs probably remember. If you go back to 2014, when Marshall was in the market for a new coach. They were initially going to hire Jeff Neubauer out of Eastern Kentucky, but
Yes.
as he was driving en route to Huntington, he gets the call indicating that offer was withdrawn because someone in the Marshall camp thought, oh, we can hire Mike D'Antoni, who at that time was the LA Lakers coach, which of course is the natural career path when you go from one of the prestigious NBA franchises
step
to
up.
Yeah, all the way up to Marshall University. But after he told him, no, no, thank you. I will say my brother Dan D'Antoni, who was a 1971 grad of Marshall, he'd be interested. And I would say that turned out quite well for the D'Antonis, at least. So,
well, you missed a step of that job. Like, after Mark D'Antoni shockingly decided to stay with the Lakers instead of going to Marshall. Yeah. Yes, they called him back, the guy at Eastern, and offered it
Neubauer.
To him again. Yeah, Neubauer.
But now he's all the way back to Kentucky. He's like, forget it, right?
Yeah. And the phrase used was, and in no uncertain terms, he told them no.
Great. You want to finish off the show?
Yeah, a couple of things. I'll try and do rapid fire. We've talked and talked and talked about replay reform. I don't think any of us want it to go away in particular. The game that's getting the most traction is the Samford-Kansas game. Part of me is like, these are supposed to be the best referees. How could all three of them miss a call like that or not, or whistle that? But it was what it was. The other thing that I've noticed is this Gene Steratore guy has been in the studio, and they go to him whenever there's a replay. And before, like, as it's being replayed, he basically gives his interpretation of what he thinks the call will be. Again, he's in the studio, and then he's batting about like 98, 99% of the time he's right. And he's right a full 2 and 3 and 5 minutes before the referees are done, which goes back to, I think, an idea, Chad, or I think it was Chad. Why don't we just have a referee in the studio like him that replays stuff?
Right. And if Gene could do 5, 6 games going on at once, you know, one guy, you do one guy per conference even, and they could probably cover all the games that are going on. You don't even need one guy in every game.
Yeah.
Yeah. I actually, on that note, John Higgins is the, he's done several Final Fours. He's now the head of basketball officiating in the West. I've sat by him at 3 or 4 games this year, and he has a mini command center on his laptop. He's watching 12 games at a time while he's in the arena. And he'll make a phone call, a bunch of phone calls and texts throughout the game. It's very, I think it's very doable.
Yeah.
And it would so speed up the games. But hopefully the system changes at some point. This could be a whole off-season show. But on that note, though, I do want to thank everyone for joining us. We'll be back again next Monday night with our Final Four preview show. See if Tytel's coming to us from L.A. maybe at that point still. But on behalf of Joby Fortson, John Tytel, John Stalica, David Griggs, Rocco Miller, check him out at Bracketeer.org and at RoccoMiller8 on X, not Y like a shirt, but X. I'm Chad Sherwood. Thanks for joining us. Talk to you again real soon.